Any questions? Oh, got it. Thanks a lot. All right, so yeah, just a quick note on the IP. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to the CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. And make sure you have the W3C account and the W3C community contributor license agreement. Those links are all in the emails that sent out. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email me or any of the co-chairs. A quick call note, meeting minutes and audio recordings are published a few days after this meeting, and they can be found in the GitHub account. We use the GT chat to queue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes, so type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue or Q minus to remove. Now, any introductions or reintroduction? If you're new to the CCG or you haven't been active for a while but you want to reintroduce yourself, please feel free to unmute. Sorry, I don't want to butcher your name.
Hi, my name is Kazumi Sato. Thank you for Christopher and Harrison for inviting me over. I think this is my first time participating. I'm a cryptographer and looking forward to join the discussions here. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Katsui. Anyone else want to introduce or reintroduce yourself? Please feel free to just unmute or type in Q plus.
I know I'm presenting, but I'll just briefly introduce myself. I'm Wolf McNally. I'm the lead researcher with Blockchain Commons. And I've been working in technology my whole life, and I'm in my late 50s now. So, I consider myself to be a creative technologist. I've worked on a lot of different projects over the years. I've done a lot of iPhone app development as well as, kind of more abstract things. And, I'm excited to be here. This is my first time.
Thank you, Wolf. Thank you for taking the time to present as well. Any other introductions or reintroductions?
Hi, I'm Shannon Appelkline, and I'm with Blockchain Commons also. I'm a technical writer there.
Welcome, Shannon. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Anyone else? All right. Any announcements or reminders? Kalia.
Hi, we've got the APAC Digital Identity Unconference coming up March 1 to 3 in Bangkok, Thailand. The Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop has been changed to be only one day, March 16th. And, of course, regular IAW has registration open, and that event happens in Mountain View, California, and it's April 16th to 20th.
Cool. Thank you, Kalia. Manu?
Lost the window. Two announcements. The first is that the World Wide Web Consortium's new public interest nonprofit organization has been launched. So for those of you that may have been aware, over the last year, they have tried to migrate from a kind of hosted organization hosted by MIT in the U.S., ERSIM in Europe, Beihang in China, and Keio in Japan. They're trying to move into their a global nonprofit. The press release just went out. I'm putting that in the chat channel. Just announcing the new transition. It won't affect any of our work, but this is kind of the end of a rough ride last year, things resulted in the good thing happening. So that's the first item. The next item is that The verifiable credentials face-to-face meeting is coming up in Miami. That is in the middle of February, the week of February 13th. If you are not a, it's W3C member only, except that, invited experts are invited to participate. And if you want to be an observer, in person at the meeting, you can also ask the chairs, for, that, as well. It's looking to be, what is it, around 25, 24 people participating, most people in person. Some people remote. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. Any other announcements or reminders?
I dropped some stuff in the chat, just my minor stuff.
Cool. Do you mind actually just share it? Because a lot of times the chat log is quite busy.
Yeah, right. Sorry. And lots of people don't, call in from phones. I was just announcing two small side events at East Denver about identity. If anyone is thinking about East Denver, links are in the chat. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Let me check the queue. All right. Any other? Chris, please. Mm-hmm.
Hi, Chris Kelly from Decentralized Identity Foundation, DIF, here. Just to let people know, we have hired a new full-time executive director, and tomorrow is her first day. So keep an eye out for those announcements tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Hi, Bumblefudge, you have other announcements?
Oh, no, sorry. Q-minus. I was just emoji the new ED.
Got it. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Any other announcements or reminders? All right. Comments on the work items? Mommy, please.
Yeah, just, quick, the, call for adoption for the EDDSA crypto suite, happens tomorrow in the verifiable credentials working group. So if you are supportive of, those crypto suites, please, support by either sending an email into the mailing list or showing up on the call and showing your support. This is the crypto suite that is used, across the nationwide digital age verification, program, TrueAge, National Association Convenience Store. It is also the crypto suite that we, a large number of organizations use to demonstrate interoperability, during the Jobs for the Future Plug Fest, too. So there's, a lot of usage of it. And, as we move it into the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, it's good to show up and show your, support of that crypto suite. That's it.
Thank you, Mani. Any other announcements, reminders, or comments on the work items? All right, let's get to the main agenda. So this week, we're very pleased to have Christopher, Wolf, and Shannon from Blockchain Commons to present on the supporting elections on with Gordian envelopes. Obviously, a lot of you guys know Christopher. He was the former W3C CCG co-chair and the co-author of Transport Layer Security. So he has quite a bit of knowledge, to say the least, about the identity standards and protocols. So very, very pleased and very, very honored to have him present on Gordian Envelope. And hope everyone has read the high-level overview or the intro video that's sent out in the links. If you want to go over those things and also today's presentation slide, please just refer to the email that I sent out or, email me and I can send those information to you. Thank you. So without further ado, let's welcome, Christopher, Wolf, and Shannon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I'm going to let Wolf start off with a brief recap. Wolf?
Yeah, so if you've actually, let me see if I can just share my screen here. Okay, here we go. So I just have a few slides. As Harrison mentioned, they're available as a PDF as well. And this will recapitulate a little bit of what's in our introduction, but there's some new material here as well. So if you've seen it, I hope it'll be worth your time. You can all see my screen now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Just a little bit about Blockchain Commons. And of course, Christopher can speak to the mission in much more detail. This is the website, and I urge you to visit blockchaincommons.com. Generally speaking, we're a community that brings together stakeholders to build open and interoperable and secure and compassionate infrastructure. And we design decentralized solutions where everyone wins. We're a nonprofit. So, we want people to be able to control their own digital destiny. So all the work we do is open source. We do specifications, we do reference libraries, we do full apps, but they're all open source. So, so I definitely recommend you check out our GitHub account, and the website is a good starting place for that. So, jumping into Gordian envelopes. We started with the metaphor of an envelope because it's actually a very interesting and very deep one, surprisingly deep, because when you think about envelopes, they're used to hold many kinds of things, plain text. You can put encrypted text in an envelope. You can redact text in an envelope. You can put signed things in an envelope. You can put a small amount of data like that QR code or a huge amount of data into an envelope. An envelope itself is also a document. It can have things on the outside that identify the sender, identify the receiver, control who has access to the contents of it, reveal part of the content without revealing the whole thing. So envelopes are a great starting place to think about digital documents. And what we realized when we thought about the structure of documents that, that envelopes could contain as well as envelopes themselves, we realized it had a hierarchical nested kind of structure. A document is basically a subject and a set of information about that subject. But the subject itself could be rich. You know, it could be a document itself, and so it could be the information. So, in fact, starting from this point, we realized, it could be envelopes all the way down, arbitrarily because it's digital. So my starting point for thinking about designing the envelope structure was a very simple couple of structures. You can think of this as pseudocode. This is Swift, but, it may as well be pseudocode. I want to emphasize, as you're looking at this, this is not the actual envelope structure. I'll show that in a moment. It's not much more complex, but this is a good way of starting to think about it, that an envelope is a subject and a set of assertions about that subject. The envelope itself is a subject, the subject itself is an envelope, so it's a nested recursive structure, as well as the assertions are, consist of a predicate and an object, which are themselves envelopes. So already you're probably recognizing here the semantic triple idea that we have a subject and we have predicate, object about that subject. So those are triples, but it gets more interesting than that. So, if we just want to represent a triple, this is what I call envelope notation. This is a simple triple Alice knows Bob, where we have the subject, and then we have an array, which is the set of predicates and objects that form the assertions on that subject. So here is a much closer representation of the actual specified and implemented envelope that we currently have. It's actually a enumerated type. It's got 7 cases, and this allows us to do more complex things. For example, a bare subject, like Alice, a bare assertion, knows Bob, as well as elided and encrypted. And that's one of the main things we're going to be talking about today is envelope's capability to elide and encrypt various parts of what I call various elements of the envelope. Because remember, an envelope is basically nested envelopes. So you'll sometimes hear me use the term element kind of interchangeably. So let's take a closer look at this particular semantic triple. The interesting thing about what falls out of this structure is that there are basically 5 positions in the structure which we can transform. And I want to go through each of those positions so you can kind of start to get the idea of the semantic power of this structure. The first position is the subject itself. And on the left-hand side where you see the duplicate there, I'm going to elide each of these 5 positions. On the right-hand side, I'm going to be adding an assertion for each of those 5 positions. So if we start with the first position, that's the subject. In this case, that's Alice. So in this case, we're on the left-hand side, we're eliding Alice. And when we elide something, we're just leaving the the digest in place. So we actually have, the envelopes are a tree, a Merkle tree, in fact, where, there's a root, digest, which represents the whole envelope. And then there's an envelope, there's a digest for just the subject. In this case, we're just leaving that digest in place and, eliding the actual data. And you'll hear me use the term, elision or elide. It's often thought of as redaction. As we thought about this, we realized that redaction is like a use case of elision. Elision is, you know, to omit data. Redaction is to deliberately withhold data. And there's several different use cases for elision. So that's the reason why I use that term instead of just simply say redact. On the right-hand side, you can see I've added another assertion to the envelope, to the subject. So again, it's a subject and a series of assertions about the subject. All right, so moving on to the second position. This is the predicate. In this case, we're eliding the word, term knows. And on the right hand side, we've added another another assertion, or its first assertion, to the predicate. And this allows you to have much more richer data representations. As you can see, you can put any kind of context or anything you want on any part of the envelope. So this could be a URI, or could be some kind of OWL specifier or something like that. So moving on to the third position, this is the object, Bob. Same idea. We're eliding on the left and adding an assertion on the right. The fourth position is the assertion itself. So in this case, we've elided the entire assertion. And so we can remove an entire assertion.
Lost you for a second. Go to the beginning of four.
Four. Okay. So, you have me back now?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, this is the actual, the assertion position itself. On the left hand side, you see we've elided the entire knows Bob assertion. And on the right hand side, we're adding an assertion to the assertion. So, again, you can nest this as deeply as you want, because the assertion itself that we're adding is itself a predicate and object envelope. So you can be as rich as you want about this. Finally, the fifth position, the envelope itself. On the left-hand side, we've elided the entire envelope and just left the root digest, which is itself an envelope. And on the right-hand side, we've wrapped the envelope and then added an assertion to that. And what I mean by wrapping is that if you just add an assertion to a subject, you're just asserting something about the subject itself. But what if you want to, for example, sign the whole envelope? Well, in that case, you wrap it and you add the signature to, as an assertion to the wrapped envelope, in which case now you've basically signed the whole inner envelope. So that's one of many use cases for wrapping envelopes. And of course, anything you've seen here that can be elided can also be encrypted using symmetric key cryptography, but these assertions can contain what we call permits, which are various kinds of ways, for example, encrypted, the symmetric key can be encrypted to a public key. So it can be encrypted to specific recipients, or can be sharded using our SSKR, sharing algorithm, which basically lets you, shard a secret and distribute it to a number of, escrow holders who have to reach a quorum to reassemble the original secret. So it's actually very flexible. So, one of the other things about envelopes is that we wanted them to be structure ready. We wanted them to be able to represent. In the upper left corner there, you actually see a mermaid diagram of an actual envelope. So obviously representing trees is very natural for it, but we also want to represent node label graphs, edge label graphs, RDF style or an RDF star style graphs, or even simpler things like just lists. And because we are based on, we created the structure based on CBOR, not on JSON, as is common. At a very low level, there's a, you can represent anything here that you can represent in CBOR, for example, just a straight array, such as an array of envelopes. And a little bit more about CBOR, because this is one of the main choices we made that's foundational to this, format, is we looked at all the different kinds of, formats out there for data serialization. We wanted one that was binary. We want it to be concise. That's, you know, we want it to be very, you know, short things should be very short. We want it to be self-describing, so that you didn't necessarily need a, an external schema already present to be able to at least parse the document. We want it to be something that codecs could be written in very few lines of code, so to operate in constrained environments. We want it to be platform and language agnostic. We wanted it to have been through the standards process, and it is an IETF standard. And we also wanted something that we wanted a predefined set of guidelines and rules for deterministic encoding. The idea being that if two people assemble the same envelope from the same information, it doesn't matter the order they add the assertions, there should be one automatically baked in canonical representation of that data. So there's no normalization or anything like that necessary. It's, you know, when you sum an envelope, it's already normalized. And we also have an entire video describing, you know, why we chose to go with Zbor, if you want more detail on that. Our internet draft, is here, and, the next couple pages have links. So, have, QR codes. So if you want to snap one, that's fine. Or you can get the PDF and just go directly to these links. But this is our internet draft that describes the basic fundamental structure of envelopes. We have a lot more detailed documents, on our GitHub repository. And there's also a number of use cases which are very interesting, which aren't really very easily done in other structures we found. For example, user-based elision. So the holder of a document can then elide parts of the document before passing on to other people. They can also elide, for example, I can pass you just the root-level digest and then create proofs about what that digest must necessarily contain by creating minimal spanning trees, minimal spanning graphs of what I want to prove. You can also do herd-based privacy, where many people create a document together that is partially elided or even entirely elided, and then people can reveal just their part of the document, the part that they are able to, while leaving everything else both committed in the document as well as but also still hidden. So those are a few starting points for discussion, and you know, I'm sure Christopher will be able to address some questions better than me. But feel free to reach out to either of us, and you know, very happy to have been able to present this here. I hope the discussion that follows is very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf. So I just wanted to explain a little bit about, you know, where this fits in with W3C. So part of my goal here is that really, what does radical elision privacy mean? How do we build that at the bottom and then build up from there? So Gordian envelope is not exactly the equivalent of a verifiable credential or a DID. It's not. It's a data format which is structure ready. So you could put in a W3C verifiable credential into it using kind of a label graph structure. You can put other kinds of credentials in using other structures. You can choose to do cryptographic selective disclosure as opposed to the hash-based selective disclosure we have, et cetera. So I just want to be clear, it's not intended as a replacement for VCs or anything. So let's be clear on that. The other thing I want to be clear on is that it allows for some opportunities that are not possible right now with sort of the JSON-LD family, but could inspire the future of that family. So we can do radical things like have, say, Harvard issue one giant verifiable credential, lowercase b, a digital credential for the entire class of 2025. And rather than actually offering individual credentials, it just offers the individual, the holders, the subjects, proofs that their information is in that structure. But in fact, Harvard maybe only publishes the root hash and a couple of assertions to say that they're an accredited organization. And this allows for a lot of herd privacy opportunities. I also think there's some interesting possibilities of kind of allowing for herd privacy with DID style structures, with revocation type structures, you know, proof that you're still included, things of that nature. So I was really trying to do that as an inspiration. I'd really like to see that in 2 years' time, that when the new specs come out for verifiable credentials, that there is a must support some form of selective disclosure. At least, you know, hash-based is simple, and there are three or four proposals out there for how we might be able to do that beyond what Gordian offers. but we can show that it works now. I mean, these, you know, all of these examples in our use cases are functioning now. You can test them with our command line app and they're ready to, they work. They do what they need to do. So, we are a community. We are, largely supported by the blockchain community. But we would really like these structures to be available to the identity community because I think they solve some, problems or at least inspire some solutions, for the W3C. So I'll leave it to, questions. Harrison, do you want to do the, Q honors?
Yes. Mike, I think I see you on the queue.
Yeah, I managed to beat Manu in. No, I mean, huge amount of awesome work, here. I mean, it's definitely a really fascinating idea, right? This notion, the underlying notions behind RDF are really common and good and key to semantics and things like that, right? Especially as we look at these bridges with machine learning and being a big CBOR fan. Really happy with that directionality of like, how do we move this into a scalable way? I guess my question is more on the standards track side of things and things like that. I mean, where do you see this going? I mean, obviously it's an ID, it's marked experimental. I mean, do you think there's a natural home for this at IETF, be it in COSE or somewhere like that? Because CBOR is in maintenance mode. I mean, what's your thinking there? I mean, do you think that this is going to go standards track? Do you think that there's a natural group? Are you trying to form a BOF? I mean, what's your feelings on all that?
Well, some of it depends on what happens with this community and where we want to go here. I mean, it is a CBOR structure and it is kind of a really nice, addition. I think it can breathe some life into CBOR. CBOR has had a lot of success in constrained environments. You're also seeing it in things like, mobile driver's license and things, things of that nature, but it's pretty solid, but it has a very limited structure capability. It's being able to do, graph structures. So I think this adds some very basic graph structures to it. And, thus it's worthy of consideration in the IETF. But the IETF is not going to do, the next layer up, which is, okay, you know, we've got this great way where you can do edge labeled graphs, node labeled graphs, all different kinds of variations there. What does that mean for, data models for credentials and other kinds of assertions? That probably needs to be in, the W3C because that's where more of the innovative work is done. That being said, other places in the IETF that, this might be of interest is the software control. It's the source code, evaluation work that is being done. I think there's some really interesting opportunities there to allow for anonymous contributors who have reputations to have assertions because these trees can all be merged in different ways and you can make basically signatures of different parts of the trees. That really allows for things like, I've done a security review of this amount of code and somebody else has done a security review of this amount of code. And we can together assert, we have that the union of these two is that, we can prove is the total, of all of that. And also potentially preserve our personal privacy if we're in Iran or Russia or, some other place where there's a concern and yet we are, judged by the community to be, worthy actors. So, wanted to be able to support those things. I don't know if it's somewhat orthogonal to COSE. There's no reason why you can't sign things now with COSE. Any CBOR objects can be in Envelope. Envelope APIs can give you just the hash. You can sign that hash of any particular part of the structure and then, add an assertion for that. Boom, you're COSE. But COSE won't take advantage of the elision structure. So
yeah, it's that syntax side that you're layering on, which is really neat. So yeah. It's pretty neat.
So same thing with RDF, RDF or RDF star, which I'm not sure if any of this community is being involved in. You know, we can certainly, you know, put those types of objects in, but if you really want to take advantage of bird privacy and proof of inclusion and some of the more advanced, lesion redaction encryption, reference capabilities of Gordian Envelope, you're going to have to tweak those, to take full advantage. Done.
Cool. Thanks. I'll hand it back to Harrison, and that's my question for the day.
Cool. Manu.
Thanks, Christopher and Wolf. The presentation was a great introduction. I haven't had a chance to dig super deep into it, so apologies if the questions are a bit rough or naive. I'm trying to create at least a mental model for how to think about this. One way that, and tell me if this is wrong, one way I'm looking at this is that, you know, with verifiable credentials, we kind of have this graph-based data model, and we express statements and claims and properties and things like that there. And it can be mapped to RDF, but it could be mapped to other graph models like the one that you're presenting here. And I'm wondering if I'm trying to figure out where these two kind of intersect. So I'm thinking if we've got, you know, verifiable credentials as a graph of information, in theory, we should be able to map it directly onto a Gordian envelope and then use the features that you're talking about to elide to basically take that graph structure and express it as effectively. I mean, this feels like another digital proof format. It feels like we can take a verifiable credential, we can put it into a Gordian envelope and use that as the digital proof on the verifiable credential. And if we were to do that, that would allow us to clearly allied at the cryptographic layer, but it would allow us to also allied kind of at the data layer where the developers are kind of like messing with the JSON LD. I'm kind of grasping in the dark. I don't know if that's how you meant this to be used, or if it can be used in that manner. So what are your thoughts there? Like in the intersection between what we're doing with graph-based data models in verifiable credentials and what you're doing with graph-based data models in the Gordian stuff.
I'll just make a quick technical comment. Yeah, which is that we haven't done any direct work on, for example, mapping RDF or JSON LD to or its variants to Gordian envelopes at this point. This is obviously something we'd like to work with people on. You know, obviously part of our motivation for doing this is to not have to do the same kinds of normalization steps and so on, the canonicalization steps that, are required with JSON LD. And, you know, I'm very interested in seeing how it maps personally. You know, I'd like to know that it maps, because I haven't done many experiments on it myself. I have taken a few small, RDF and JSON LD documents and kind of transcribe them myself to convince myself that it'll work, but I haven't done any formal work on that. Christopher?
Yeah. So, basically you absolutely can do, you know, the URIs that, RDF requires. You can, you know, make statements about the individual assertions. So you could have the quad equivalent, without any, you know, challenges there. You know, I think the real test is when it comes all together, because there is still this kind of weird intermix between the credential and the proof format, that's in the current data model that we may not be able to completely, solve easily, especially with contexts and things of that nature. No reason why you can't insert a context, into either a predicate or into an assertion. But there may be some complications there. Part of the goal is to make it that it will work with RDF, style graphs and, you know, edge style graphs, which is, you know, one of the other big alternatives, out there, or just a list like MDL. One of the interesting things about an MDL is that, you know, its list, it doesn't have a tree of selective disclosure capabilities. It basically has a list of items, and you can elide anything on that list. well, we can offer some additional capabilities where that where you can have trees inside each of those items, which the MDL way of doing selective disclosure doesn't support. I hope that helps, but I think there's more experimentation and proving to be done. But since that is our goal, we will support it if the community wants to puzzle it out with us. We can't do it by ourselves. That's it.
Brian?
Yeah, my question is very much about context. I assume people can hear me?
Yes.
I wanted to ask where the so I know you said you haven't really solved context yet, but you know, there's a lot of vocabulary issues handled by JSON-LD, and I would say also by known fields represented through JSON and say something like a JWT. So my understanding is that Gordian Envelope is pretty sensible, flexible encoding for the graph structure and privacy protection that many of us are looking for in using these other formats with these known fields. JSON-LD put a lot of effort into understanding what a certain field exactly is. And that's, that goes pretty deep into the JSON-LD specification and how it's solving those open world problems. So my presumption is that, the understanding of what a field is a matter that would go inside this subject predicate object format that you have here. And I guess my question is, you know, even if you're putting these other, like say taking a JSON-LD thing and representing it with Gordian envelopes, you still have to do the other JSON-LD things, right?
Well, certainly if you're representing some kind of knowledge graph or whatever, you need to be based on some kind of ontology. You know, we've tried to, anticipate some of the needs. For example, you know, the size of the envelope is something that we're concerned about because we want to have it be useful in constrained environments. So one of those seven cases that I pointed out is called, a known value. And the known value is just a 64-bit integer, which of course JSON is very good at encoding these things efficiently. And what that integer means is not predefined by the envelope spec itself. We have a number of particular values that we've been using in our experiments. I believe that overall this would ultimately be part of the standardization process for the community or communities to carve out parts of that 64-bit space to represent things like, you know, ISA or dereference by via or you know whatever you know kinds of ontological terms you need that may pre-exist, and you know, and so I can see certainly existing ontologies being mapped onto these simple you know, integers, so you don't need to include whole URIs or anything like that in the envelope. You just reference them, and they can be predicates, or they can be you know objects, or they can be assertions on predicate object pairs, on assertions themselves. So you can you know you're again you have a lot of semantic flexibility, and of course you could still use full URIs if you really wanted to. There's no reason to have to use the known values.
Yeah, let me talk specific. So we're not precisely the same level as JSON-LD is to RDF. When you take JSON-LD and the form that we always reference it in our specs, that's not actually what's signed. It goes through a transformation into an RDF structure if you're doing the, you know, you're getting the quads and such. We're a little bit closer to the quads, the unwrapped JSON-LD. I mean, that's one of the obstacles I've always had with JSON-LD is that, you know, in a naive way, you can look at that structure and go, oh, that's really cool. And then you try to reproduce it. And then, you know, somebody like Longley will come along and say, but wait a second, that isn't quite the way, because when we take it to the next level, this hidden level of quads, we've broken something, because there's some cheats and shortcuts that happen in JSON-LD to make it very readable and consumable and small. So we're a little bit closer to the quad side of the representation of JSON-LD or RDF. The second thing is, as far as compacting, obviously we can define a bunch of different, predicates. There are other ways, you can create a sort of a child, branch that has all the URIs, and then you have the hash of those URIs, and so you can now reference those hashes in other places in the Gordian envelopes. You can get that kind of compression that the CBOR LD was playing around with.
I should have mentioned that aside from just, these known values, you know, you can use digests anywhere. You can use digests as references to objects that can be found elsewhere, even within the same document or, across documents. So, you can use them to refer to entire, ad hoc spaces that you created that, you know, presumably people know how to dereference.
So one of the concepts here is that, you know, the reason why we use the term elision is A, you can have, you know, just a hash. So that means you can sign something that's encrypted or sign something that's elided and still, you know, be able to verify it later when some other part is elided, or encrypted. But what we mean by encryption can be a lot of different things. You can, we have this kind of this permit mechanism that could work. I mean, right now we have it with, symmetric, permits. We have asymmetric, permits with public keys. We have SSKR permits, which allows you, if you have sufficient copies, a quorum of copies of it from different parties, you can reconstruct and then decrypt. But there are a lot of other, permits that are possible, including ZCAPs and, various kinds of smart signature scripts, et cetera, can be, you know, used as permit mechanisms. That allows a lot of flexibility. But the other thing you can elide is you're eliding by reference. So you can basically say, here is this other Gordian envelope someplace else. And here's the root hash of it. And, proofs of inclusions are also Gordian envelopes. You could even include the proof of inclusion to show that you were proof that your subset that was important for you was in that other envelope. Obviously, none of those precisely map to JSON LD, one-to-one. Also, because we can put labels on the predicates, on the objects, or on the predicate object pairs, or on the whole thing, there are some opportunities that, a strict, node labeled graph, can't do, because we can maybe, move those assertions some other place. So, it needs some expertise from top level experts of JSON LD to say, yeah, this is potentially valuable for us, and let's map this out. And if there's something that we've missed or, can't be represented, then, you know, we want to fix it. That's it.
Yeah, going to Manu's point earlier, you know, the Gordian envelope arose not just out of, you know, a mere dissatisfaction with, for example, certain aspects of, you know, JSON LD or whatever, but the idea that, you know, we wanted to kind of take a greenfield approach to this and just say, okay, if we were designing the simplest but most flexible structure possible, what would that look like? And this is what we came up with. And so, as Christopher was mentioning, you know, we would expect that it in some ways it would be a superset of what could be out there. Now, obviously we still need the community to help us test that, that hypothesis.
Got it. Thanks a lot.
Also, I mean, clearly a motivation also is that, you know, I wish I knew what the actual numbers are, but I wouldn't be surprised if the number of people that are working on digital credentials that are not doing JSON LD may be as large or larger. Especially in the, you know, sort of the more commercial side, of some of this type of stuff, you know, people saying I'm doing a verifiable credential, but it's no way not a verifiable credential, W3C style. But part of the resistance, I think, has to do with, people being kind of flustered with, you know, oh, wait a second. I just need it to be a damn list like MDL did. Well, we can support a damn list, you know, we don't need it to be a tree. We don't need it to be a graph structure if we don't want it to be. So we want
some
to
of my most, some of my most basic, examples of Gordian envelope. You'll see them when you read our documentation are just, you know, a text string, a UTF-8 string, encoded. It maybe adds like 3 bytes of overhead. And that's a whole envelope that contains a text string, which is just a bare subject. And, you know, so again, simple things should be small and simple, you know?
Okay. Next question.
Ori, you're next in the queue.
So you've basically gotten into what I queued to say, which is simple things should remain simple.
I just wanted to comment on mapping from JSON-LD verifiable credential data formats or media types into Gordian or into other structures. Those mappings are painful sometimes, depending on the complexity of the source format, and they can be error prone. And then they can require additional libraries that, you know, you need to include to support. So, you know, mapping can be a great way of making it, you know, look like the source format has lots and lots of different concrete security formats that it could be implemented in. And that can be great and worth it if that source data format is really highly valuable. But it's important that the security formats not be overly fit to it, and that they still be able to achieve those smaller, simpler use cases like the list and, you know, examples you've given. So I think, you know, just beware of thinking mapping is a good idea. Mapping is the beginning of a road to pain. And at the end of that road, there might be value, but there also might not be. So just be careful with mapping.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I know that if you do it naively, you're going to end up either losing some of the benefits of JSON-LD or whatever you're mapping from, or lose the benefits of Gordian envelope. I mean, if you just, you know, you could theoretically just put a Gordian audio, you know, an envelope tag and have one giant, CBORD structure that is, has nothing to do with Gordian. And then, you know, it just, you know, I mean, that's, can be done, but you're not going to be able to take advantage of either of those. So, but I do think that the architecture is a really nice layer. Like, we really, I mean, other than the fact that we have to define a hash algorithm, everything else is agnostic. I mean, you can sign things with whatever, proof method that, you know, that needs a hash for it to be signed, and doesn't have to itself do some magic. We can do, it just feels like a really natural, simple layer that you can do other layers on top and maybe simplify some of those other layers because they're not having to do all of this. That's it.
Yeah. I should point out that, you know, our internet draft, you know, basically points out that we've, you know, chosen Blake 3 for our particular current reference implementations, but nothing in the spec actually locks you to any of that. You could do an implementation of Gordian envelope that uses whatever cipher suite you want, for whatever purposes you want. But, you know, in terms of widely adopted, versions, you know, we'd like there to be some consensus about what the best of, best practices are for, crypto suites and just support just the minimal, you know, kind of opinionated set, at least for our reference implementations. But, you know, this is where we need to have a lot of input from the community. So we really kind of figure out, if there is, something that people can agree upon enough to do this, but we still think the structure itself has value, even if, it needs to be adapted in certain ways by certain parties to do certain things. I would like to see it personally as an interchange format that can be used by, you know, the world over for a wide variety of things. But then there needs to be some agreement about how certain things, like, as Christopher mentioned, the digest is going to be handled. Now, because it's CBOR, and we do mention this in the internet draft, you know, we've taken some pains to think about it as future proof that, you know, if we need to introduce a new, digest algorithm or some other crypto suite later, you know, CBOR itself is flexible enough to tag things as being, as having some kind of future structure. And so, you know, older parsers may not be able to fully parse them, but newer parsers can parse both the new and the old structures. And so envelopes can be as ephemeral as a few milliseconds for a remote procedure call of some kind, or can be as big as a blockchain, and still be future proof.
I want to quickly respond to Ori. We are looking at maybe SHA 256 as a baseline. We have more and more because of the Silicon Salon chip acceleration and things of that nature on highly constrained devices has become more important. And so that's one direction we're pursuing. And then the other direction is, you know, right now with a hash tree, you have to, you know, basically present all the hashes between the root hash and the top hash. There are some new proof methods where a tree can be represented even a million deep with only 96 bytes using, say, a Poseidon hash. So we are investigating that, and I'm talking with cryptographers now about, you know, what are the two choices? Because I really feel like we need, I think we need one that we're going to basically say is the base. And then we're going to basically reserve one that says, okay, when the base expires or, you know, the community is ready, here's the second one. And those will be, I mean, that'll be the suite in a sense. I much more want to go in the direction of WireGuard style choices, or the way TLS really in 1.3 eliminated a bunch of suites, than go with any kind of algorithmic agility. We just have to make some smart decisions before people start shipping anything with this, which I presume will be that, you know, this, quarter two.
Cool. Manu, you're next.
Yeah, thinking a bit more about, you know, where all this kind of fits into the ecosystem, I'm getting a clearer picture. To address something Ryan said, I don't think we have to worry too much about kind of the semantic mapping. Like, you know, JSON-LD exists and it uses a couple of basic primitives to do that mapping, and I don't see any reason why Gordian couldn't use the same mechanism or use it optionally, right? So I don't think folks should be too worried about that. The other thing that's interesting, I think, about Gordian is, today, when it, like in verifiable credentials, if you do RDF dataset canonicalization, what you end up with is nquads. It's a list of these are the nodes in the graph, and it doesn't have the annotation properties that Wolf and Christopher are highlighting that Gordian does, right? RDF star is trying to do a bit of that, but being able to annotate nodes and predicate object relationships, it doesn't have any of that. And there's nothing to say that when we canonicalize, like if we're in a verifiable credential, when we canonicalize, we don't have to go to RDF, right? We could just canonicalize straight to Gordian envelope. And just to be clear, that what we would get out of that is it looks like the envelope has structure, right? RDF dataset canonicalization today with nquads is a flat list. It has no structure. In fact, we lose the structure when we canonicalize. And that makes doing things like selective disclosure more difficult. Like, you know, the BBS stuff that's going on right now, it's a bit more difficult to do that because – and the reason you need a JSON-LD frame is because we can't save the structure when we canonicalize. So it's things like that that are kind of popping up as like, this would be really interesting. Because if we could save the structure, then all of a sudden selective disclosure mechanisms, we would have more options on what to do kind of at the cryptographic layer there. Did that make sense, Wolf and Christopher? Is that like a...
Great. Yeah, I think it's an excellent thought, Manu.
Okay, thanks.
By the way, I just want to do a quick time check. I think there are still a couple more questions. Christopher and Wolf, will you be able to stay on for another 5 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so we'll end in about 3 minutes. So if other people need to jump, please feel free to do so. Otherwise, we'll stay on for another 5 minutes for the remainder of the questions. And next week we'll have the multi-sig verifiable credentials and conditional proof. I'll set out the agenda tomorrow. All right, Keith, you're next.
Thank you. I just have maybe a basic question, maybe something I'm not following, but who would be the author of the Gordian envelope? Would it be, in the traditional verifiable credential sense, the issuer of a credential to a holder would also author the Gordian envelope, or would it be third parties that are authoring Gordian envelopes, or maybe I'm missing that piece?
So obviously issuers, you know, if you've got a signature involved, signatures have hashes, encryption has nonces. Signatures have both of them have nonces. So they will be unique in some fashion because it's signed by an issuer or is encrypted by somebody. That being said, elision can be done by anybody. You may decide, hey, you've given me something where all the signatures are valid, but you've elided too much. I'm not going to accept it. That is something new to our community. We generally, don't allow holders to Allied, directly. We sort of indirectly support it through some of the cryptographic tricks that the issuer offers. But in, Gordian envelope, everything can be Allied, and a holder. Degrees down, the issuer gave it to the subject gave it to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy gave it to the insurance company. The insurance company could basically say, hey, I need to Allied some of this data because it's sensitive for me too, and even further Allied it to the next party, and all the signatures will still work. That does, and we talk about this in the IT draft, mean you have to be careful about what you accept. And, you also technically, we'll warn you in our APIs if you try to sign something that is Allied, because then you're signing something where some part of it you can't actually know what it is. But maybe you know it through some other pattern, and thus you're willing to sign it. But those are two kind of critical security sensibilities that Gordian has that make it a little bit, different than, classic.
Yeah, and with Gordian envelope, it's possible to sign something where you don't know what you're signing. And I'm not sure if that's useful or not, but you might want to validate that you aren't signing something that has been partially Allied. But we have some examples in our documentation. For example, a person gets an educational credential, which lists in detail all the courses they took and so on. They Allied certain parts of that just to show they have the credential, but it's still signed by the issuer, which the signature is still valid, even though it's partially Allied. They provide it to their employer. Their employer is a contractor to another agency, and they want to warrant to that agency that their employees have certain credentials, but without revealing the identities of the employees, they Allied it further and hand it on to the agency, who can then verify the chain of signatures, both from the employer who signed the Allied envelope and from the original issuing organization that offered the credential, without even knowing who the person is. So, yeah.
Cool. I just have a question. Earlier, if I recall correctly, you mentioned that a lot of these work is supported by the blockchain community. So I'm just curious about how does Gordian envelope data structure and data model, what's its use case, right? And how is it being applied in the blockchain community?
Right now, mostly about resilience. So the first deployment of Gordian. So we've been using some other Gordian UR standards and whatever in the blockchain community for animated QRs, for partially signed transactions, for a variety of operations on keys. Please give me a public key of this derivation so that I can use it in a multi-sig contract. Those types of things already are deployed by over a dozen companies. Gordian envelope takes those structures and allows us to do some very important, resilience and recovery things. So that the big project this quarter by, the Gordian developer community is to do collaborative seed recovery, which basically means we can shard keys in a variety of ways. Some can go in iCloud, some might go on a hardware ring, some might go to your social recovery partners, all different kinds of variants there. And when you recover, you'll not only get your seed material, you'll also get the other metadata that is necessary. Because increasingly today, just having the keys isn't good enough. You need to know, what is the whisper address of the partner that, is required to co-sign something with you? What is the, what is the dynamics of the quorum that, is allowed and authorized to do something? So all of those will be wrapped in Gordian envelopes. A lot of the times you might want to Allied some of that, data, because really all you care about for somebody is, some aspect of it. And because it's all, CBOR, they can begin to just, wrap, their metadata in, CBOR. And when envelope is ready for the collaborative seed recovery, they'll just be able to drop it into an envelope, and they have instant capability to do, quorum recovery thresholds and other stuff.
I should mention that all our previous work before envelope was based in deterministic CBOR. So we chose CBOR quite some time ago. to base our stuff on. And so we have a lot of specs that deal with, for example, how to transmit keys, seeds, things like that, using Cbor based structures. And those slot right in to our work on Envelope, which is basically another higher level structure, that includes all the, of course, the things we've been talking about, the Elision encryption proofs, things like that, that, you know, our previous work, didn't include, but could take advantage of. And you can too, using the structure.
Got it. Thank you. And I think we have one last question from Ryan. Ryan?
I like short meetings, so I removed myself from the queue. Thank you.
Got it.
Great.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Wolf and Shannon, for taking the time to present about Gordian Envelope. Just want to, this is a great presentation, and I really like the beauty of the data structure. So that if you have further questions, please feel free to reach out to Christopher, Wolf, and any last words, concluding words from Christopher and Wolf?
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. And we have lots of documentation. We have videos. We have a command line demo that you can, and videos of how to use the command lines for 9 different important things that Gordian Envelope can do. And then Shannon, worked hard to create 4 major use cases that are progressive use cases to demonstrate, you know, everything from, oh, I just want to do a simple educational credential to, oh, you know, we want to take 1,000 credentials and join them together and have, you know, herd privacy on them and prevent, various kinds of human rights abuses and such. So I encourage you to take a look at the use cases, the videos, the command line, if you're interested in going further. And we do kind of, right now it's been about monthly meetings on Gordian Envelope and collaborative seed recovery. So if you're interested in those, just let me know and I can send you invites.
Sounds good. And Christopher, if you don't mind, just send me the link and I can reply back to the community about those information. All right. Great. Thanks a lot. This concludes the meeting. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.